Forward. This is a James Bond type of story, written before I had ever heard of James Bond. Actually, those who know my writing know that I never introduce naughty motifs into my stories. You can tell that from the other stories in this volume. However, an editor, I won't mention his name, once told me he suspected that I never had love scenes in my stories because I was incapable of writing them. Naturally, I repudiated that suggestion with the scorn and contumely it deserved, and said with heat that it was merely my natural purity and wholesomeness that kept me from doing so. Since the expression on his face was one of obvious disbelief, I said, "I'll show you. I'll write a science fiction love story, but not for publication." But it turned out also to be a mystery, and I was so pleased with it, I let it be published. Anyway, it shows I can do it if I want to. It's just that I don't want to, ordinarily. I'm in Marsport without Hilda. It worked itself out, to begin with, like a dream. I didn't have to make any arrangements. I didn't have to touch it. I just watched things work out. Maybe right then's when I should have smelled catastrophe. It began with my usual month's layoff between assignments. A month on and a month off is the right and proper routine for the Galactic Service. I reached Marsport for the usual 3-day layover before the short hop to Earth. Ordinarily, Hilda, God bless her, as sweet a wife as any man ever had, would be there waiting for me, and we'd have a nice sedate time of it. A nice little interlude for the two of us. The only trouble with that is that Marsport is the rowdiest hellhole in the system, and a nice little interlude isn't exactly what fits in. Only how do I explain that to Hilda, eh? Well, this time my mother-in-law, God bless her for a change, got sick just 2 days before I reached Marsport. And the night before landing, I got a spacegram from Hilda, saying she would stay on Earth with her mother and wouldn't meet me this one time. I grammed back my loving respects and my feverish anxiety concerning her mother. And when I landed, there I was. I was in Marsport without Hilda. That was still nothing, you understand. It was the frame of the picture, the bones of the woman. Now there was the matter of the lines and coloring inside the frame, the skin and flesh outside the bones. So I called up Flora, Flora of certain rare episodes in the past, and for the purpose I used a video booth. Damn the expense, full speed ahead. I was giving myself 10-to-1 odds she'd be out. She'd be busy with her videophone disconnected. She'd be dead, even. But she was in, with her videophone connected, and she was anything but dead. She looked better than ever. Age cannot wither nor custom stale, as somebody or other once said. Her infinite variety. And the robe she wore, or rather, almost didn't wear, helped a lot. Was she glad to see me? She squealed, "Max, it's been years." "I know, Flora, but this is it if you're available. Because guess what? I'm in Marsport without Hilda." She squealed again. "Isn't that nice? Then come on over." I goggled a bit. That was too much. "You mean you are available?" You have to understand that Flora was never available without plenty of notice. Well, she was that kind of knockout. She said, "Oh, I've got some quibbling little arrangement, Max, but I'll take care of that. You come on over." "I'll come," I said happily. Flora was the kind of girl, well, I tell you, she had her rooms under Martian gravity, 0.4 Earth normal. The gadget to free her of Marsport's pseudograv field was expensive, of course, but I'll tell you just in passing that it was worth it, and she had no trouble paying it off. If you've ever held a girl in your arms at 0.4 Gs, you need no explanation. If you haven't, explanations will do no good. I'm also sorry for you. Talk about floating on clouds. And mind you, the girl has to know how to handle low gravity. Flora did. I won't talk about myself, you understand, but Flora didn't howl for me to come over and start breaking previous engagements just because she was at loose ends. Her ends were never loose. I closed connections, and only the prospect of seeing it all in the flesh, such flesh, could have made me wipe out the image with such alacrity. I stepped out of the booth. And at that point, that precise point, that very split second of time, the first whiff of catastrophe nudged itself up to me. That first whiff was the bald head of that lousy Rog Crinton in the Mars office, gleaming over a head full of pale blue eyes, pale yellow complexion, and pale brown mustache. He was the same Rog Crinton, with some Slavic strain in his ancestry, that half the people out on fieldwork thought had a middle name that went son of a bitch. I didn't bother getting on all fours and beating my forehead against the ground because my vacation had started the minute I had gotten off the ship. I said with only normal politeness, "What the hell do you want? And I'm in a hurry. I got an appointment." He said, "You've got an appointment with me. I've got a little job for you." I laughed and told him in all necessary anatomical detail where he could put the little job and offered to get him a mallet to help. I said, "It's my month off, friend." He said, "Red emergency alert, friend," which meant no vacation, just like that. I couldn't believe it. I said, "Nuts, Rog, have a heart. I got an emergency alert of my own. Nothing like this." "Rog," I pleaded, "can't you get someone else? Anyone else? You're the only Class A agent on Mars. Send to Earth, then. They stack agents like micropile units at headquarters. This has got to be done before 11 p.m. What's the matter? You haven't got 3 hours? I grabbed my head. The boy just didn't know. I said, "Let me make a call, will you?" I stepped back in the booth, glared at him, and said, "Private." Flora shone on the screen again, like a mirage on an asteroid. She said, "Something wrong, Max? Don't say something's wrong. I canceled my other engagement." I said, "Flora, baby, I'll be there. I'll be there. But something's come up." She asked the natural question in a hurt tone of voice, and I said, "No, not another girl. With you in the same town, they don't make any other girls. Females, maybe, not girls. Baby, honey, it's business. Just hold on. It won't take long." She said, "All right," but she said it kind of like it was just enough not all right so that I got the shivers. I stepped out of the booth and said, "All right, Rog, son of a bitch, what kind of mess have you cooked up for me?" We went into the spaceport bar and got us an insulated booth. He said, "Antares Giant is coming in from Sirius in exactly half an hour at 8 p.m. local time." "Okay." "Three men will get out, among others, and wait for the Space Eater coming in from Earth at 11 p.m. and leaving for Capella sometime thereafter. The three men will get on the Space Eater and will be out of our jurisdiction." "So?" "So between 8 and 11, they will be in a special waiting room, and you will be with them. I have a trimensional image of each for you so that you'll know who they are and which is which. You have between 8 and 11 to decide which one is carrying contraband."
"What kind of contraband?"
"The worst kind. Altered spacealine."
"Altered spacealine?"
He had thrown me. I knew what spacealine was. If you've been on a space hop, you know too. And in case you're earthbound yourself, the bare fact is that everyone needs it on the first space trip. Almost everybody needs it for the first dozen trips. Lots need it every trip. Without it, there's vertigo associated with free fall, screaming terror, semi-permanent psychoses. With it, there's nothing. You don't mind a thing. And it isn't habit-forming, has no adverse side effects. Spacealine is ideal, essential, unsubstitutable. When in doubt, take spacealine. Rog said, "That's right, altered spacealine. It can be changed chemically by a simple reaction that can be conducted in anyone's basement into a drug that will give one giant-sized charge and become your baby blue habit the first time. It is on a par with the most dangerous alkaloids we know."
"And we just found out about it?"
"No. The service has known about it for years, and we've kept others from knowing by squashing every discovery flat. Now, however, the discovery has gone too far."
"In what way?"
"One of the men who will be stopping over at this spaceport is carrying some of the altered spacealine on his person. Chemists in the Capellan system, which is outside the Federation, will analyze it and set up ways of synthesizing more. After that, it's either fight the worst drug menace we've ever seen, or suppress the matter by suppressing the source."
"You mean spacealine?"
"Right. And if we suppress spacealine, we suppress space travel." I decided to put my finger on the point.
"Which one of the three has it?"
Rog smiled nastily. "If we knew, would we need you? You were to find out which of the three. You're calling on me for a lousy frisk job? Touch the wrong one at the risk of a haircut down to the larynx. Every one of the three is a big man on his own planet. One is Edward Harpenaster, one is Joaquin Lipsky, and one is Andiamo Ferrucci."
"Well?" "He was right. I'd heard of every one of them. Chances are you have, too. Important, very important people. And not one was touchable without proof in advance." I said,
"Would one of them touch a dirty deal like there are trillions involved?" said Rog. "Which means any one of the three would. And one of them has, because Jack Hawk got that far before he was killed."
"Jack Hawk's dead?"
"Right. And one of those guys arranged the killing. Now you find out which. You put the finger on the right one before 11, and there's a promotion, a raise in pay, a payback for poor Jack Hawk, and a rescue of the galaxy. You put the finger on the wrong one, and there'll be a nasty interstellar situation,
and you'll be out on your ear, and also on every blacklist from here to Antares and back. I said, suppose I don't finger anybody. That would be like fingering the wrong one, as far as the service is concerned. I gotta finger someone, but only the right one, or my head's handed to me. In thin slices, you're beginning to understand me, Max. In a long lifetime of looking ugly, Rog Crinton had never looked uglier. The only comfort I got out of staring at him was the realization that he was married, too, and that he lived with his wife at Marsport all year round. And does he deserve that? Maybe I'm hard on him, but he deserves it. I put in a quick call to Flora as soon as Rog was out of sight. She said, well? The magnetic seams on her robe were open just right, and her voice sounded as thrillingly soft as she looked. I said, baby, honey, it's something I can't talk about, but I gotta do it, see? Now you hang on. I'll get it over with if I have to swim the Grand Canal to the ice cap in my underwear, see? If I have to claw Phobos out of the sky, if I have to cut myself in pieces and mail myself parcel post. Gee, she said. If I thought I was going to have to wait, I winced. She just wasn't the type to respond to poetry. Actually, she was a simple creature of action. But after all, if I were going to be drifting through low gravity in a sea of jasmine perfume with Flora, poetry response is not the type of qualification I would consider most indispensable. I said urgently, just hold on, Flora. I won't be any time at all. I'll make it up to you. I was annoyed, sure, but I wasn't worried as yet. Rog hadn't more than left me when I figured out exactly how I was going to tell the guilty man from the others. It was easy. I should have called Rog back and told him, but there's no law against wanting egg in your beer and oxygen in your air. It would take me 5 minutes, and then off I would go to Flora. A little late, maybe, but with a promotion, a raise, and a slobbering kiss from the service on each cheek. You see, it's like this. Big industrialists don't go space-hopping much. They use transvideo reception. Well, when they do go to some ultra-high interstellar conference, as these three were probably going, they took spacaline. For one thing, they didn't have enough hops under their belt to risk doing without. For another, spacaline was the expensive way of doing it, and industrialists did things the expensive way. I know their psychology. Now, that would hold for two of them. The one who carried contraband, however, couldn't risk spacaline, even at the price of risking space sickness. Under spacaline influence, he could throw the drug away, or give it away, or talk gibberish about it. He would have to stay in control of himself. It was as simple as that. The Antares giant was on time. They brought in Lipsky first. He had thick, ruddy lips, rounded jowls, very dark eyebrows, and hair just beginning to show gray. He just looked at me and sat down. Nothing. He was under spacaline. I said, good evening, sir. He said in a dreamy voice, surrealismus of Panami hearts in three-quarter time for a cup of coffeedom of speech. That was spacaline all the way. The buttons in the human mind were set free-swinging. Each syllable suggests the next in free association. And Andiamo Ferrucci came in next. Black mustache, long and waxed, olive complexion, pockmarked face. He sat down. I said, nice trip? He said, trip the light fantastic, talk the clock is crowings on the bird. Lipsky said, bird to the wise guide book to all places everybody. I grinned. That left Harpenaster. I had my needle gun neatly palmed and out of sight, and the magnetic coil ready to grip him. And then Harpenaster came in. He was thin, leathery, and, though near bald, considerably younger than he seemed in his tri-dimensional image. And he was spacaline to the gills. I said, damn, Harpenaster said. Damn Yankee note speech to his last time I saw Would You Say So. Ferrucci said, so the seed, the territory under dispute, do well to come along road to Nightingale. Lipsky said, Gaylord's hopping pong balls. I stared from one to the other as the nonsense ran down in shorter and shorter spurts, and then silence. I got the picture all right. One of them was faking. He had thought ahead and realized that omitting the spacaline would be a giveaway. He might have bribed an official into injecting saline or dodged it in some other way. One of them was faking. It wasn't hard to fake the thing. Comedians on Subetheric had a spacaline skit regularly. It was amazing the liberties they could take with the moral code in that way. You've heard him. I stared at him. I got the first prickle at the base of my skull that said, what if you don't finger the right one? It was 8:30, and it was my job, my reputation, my head growing rickety upon my neck to be considered. I saved it all for later and thought of Flora. She wasn't going to wait for me forever. For that matter, chances were she wouldn't wait for half an hour. I wondered, could the faker keep up free association if nudged gently onto dangerous territory? I said, the floor is covered with a nice solid drug. and ran the last two words together to make it solid drug. Lipsky. Drug from underneath the do, re, mi, fa, so, to be saved. Ferrucci said, saved in a haircut above the common herd, something about unicorny as Kansas high as my knee. Harpenaster said, neither wind nor snow, use trying to buy forever and evervescence, and since I buy a tighter totter. Lipsky said, totters and rags. Ferrucci said, exactly. Harpenaster said, acclimation. A few grunts, and they ran down. I tried again, and I didn't forget to be careful. They would remember everything I said afterward, and what I said had to be harmless. I said, this is a darn good space line. Ferrucci said, lions and tigers and elephant thills, on the prairie dogs do bark of the bawa. I interrupted, looking at Harpenaster. A darn good space line. Line the bed and rest a little black sheepshin of wrong way to wring the clothes of a perfect day. I interrupted again, glaring at Lipsky. Good space line. Lyran is hot chocolate, ain't gonna be the same on UV and double the stakes and potato and heel. Someone else said, heal the sickness yerden, right all Winstance. Tance with mealtime. I'm commingle. English. Ishter seals. Eels. I tried a few more times, got nowhere. The faker, whichever he was, had practiced or had natural talents at talking free association. He was disconnecting his brain and letting the words come out any old way. And he must be inspired by knowing exactly what I was after. If drug hadn't given it away, spaceline, three times repeated, must have. I was safe with the other two, but he would know, and he was having fun with me. All three were saying phrases that might have pointed to a deep inner guilt. Soul to be saved, little black sheepishin of wrong, drug from underneath, and so on. Two were saying such things helplessly, randomly. The third was amusing himself. So how did I find the third? I was in a feverish thrill of hatred against him, and my fingers twitched. The bastard was subverting the galaxy. More than that, he was keeping me from Flora. I could go up to each of them and start searching. The two who were really under spaceline would make no move to stop me. They could feel no emotion, no fear, no anxiety, no hate, no passion, no desire for self-defense. And if one made the slightest gesture of resistance, I would have my man. But the innocent ones would remember afterward. I sighed. If I tried it, I would get the criminal all right, but later I would be the nearest thing to chopped liver any man had ever been. There would be a shake-up in the service, a big stink the width of the galaxy. And in the excitement and disorganization, the secret of altered spaceline would get out anyway, and so what the hell? Of course, the one I wanted might be the first one I touched. One chance out of three. I'd have one out, and only God can make a three. Damn it, something had started them going while I was muttering to myself, and spaceline is contiguous to gigolo, my, oh. I stared desperately at my watch, and my line of sight focused on 9:15. Where the devil was the time going to? Oh, my. Oh, nuts. Oh, Flora. I had no choice. I made my way to the booth for another quick call to Flora. Just a quick one, you understand, to keep things alive, assuming they weren't dead already. I kept saying to myself, she won't answer. I tried to prepare myself for that. There were other girls. There were other... Hell, there were no other girls. If Hilda had been in Marsport, I would never have had Flora on my mind in the first place, and it wouldn't have mattered. But I was in Marsport without Hilda, and I had made a date with Flora. Flora and a body that had been made up out of heaping handfuls of all that was soft and fragrant and firm. Flora in a low-gravity room and a way about her that made it seem like freefall through a warm, breathable ocean of champagne-flavored meringue. The signal was signaling and signaling, and I didn't dare break off. Answer, answer, she answered. She said, it's you. Of course, sweetheart. Who else would it be? Lots of people. Someone who would come. There's just this little detail of business, honey. What business? Plastons for who? I almost corrected her grammar, but I was wondering what this plastons kick was. Then I remembered. I told her once I was a plaston salesman. That was the time I brought her a plaston nightgown. It was a honey. Just thinking of it made me ache where I needed no more ache. I said, look, just give me another half hour. Her eyes grew moist. I'm sitting here all by myself. I'll make it up to you. To show you how desperate I was getting, I was definitely beginning to think along paths that could lead only to jewelry, even though a sizable dent in the bank book would show up to Hilda's piercing eye like the Horsehead Nebula interrupting the Milky Way. She said, I had a perfectly good date, and I broke it off. I protested. You said it was a quibbling little arrangement. That was a mistake. I knew it the minute I said it. She shrieked, "Quibbling little arrangement?" It was what she had said. But having the truth on your side just makes it worse than arguing with a woman. Don't I know? You call a man who's promised me an estate on Earth? She went on and on about that estate on Earth. There wasn't a gal in Marsport who wasn't wrangling for an estate on Earth, and you could count the number who got one on a 6-finger of either hand. But hope springs eternal in the human breast, and Flora had plenty of room for it to spring in. I tried to stop her. I threw in honeys and babies until you would have thought that every bee on the planet Earth was pregnant. No use. She finally said, "And here I am all alone with nobody, and what do you think that will do to my reputation?" And broke off contact. Well, she was right. I felt like the lowest heel in the galaxy. If the word did get around that she'd been stood up, the word would also get around that she was stand-upable, that she was losing the old touch. A thing like that can ruin a girl. I went back into the reception room. A flunky outside the door saluted me. I stared at the three industrialists and speculated on the order in which I would slowly choke each to death if I could but receive choking orders. Harpin asked her first, maybe. He had a thin, stringy neck that the fingers could go around neatly, and a sharp Adam's apple against which the thumbs could find purchase. He cheered me up infinitesimally, to the point where I muttered, "Boy," just out of sheer longing. It started them off at once. Ferrucci said, "Boil the water in the spout, you go in the snow to sneeze." Harpenaster, with a scrawny neck, added, "Niece and nephew don't like orpillary cat." Lipsky said, "Cattle for shipmentering, the home stretchings are good bait, and drank drunk. Drunkle anterior passage wait a while, wild beasts, oh pray. Riles to Chicago, go way. Waiter, terrible, bull." Then nothing. They stared at me, I stared at them. They were empty of emotion, or two were, and I was empty of ideas, and time passed. I stared at him some more and thought about Flora. It occurred to me that I had nothing to lose, that I had not already lost. I might as well talk about her. I said, "Gentlemen, there is a girl in this town whose name I will not mention for fear of compromising her. Let me describe her to you, gentlemen." And I did. If I say so myself, the last 2 hours had honed me to such a fine force-field edge that the description of Flora took on a kind of poetry that seemed to be coming from some wellspring of masculine force deep in the sub-basement of my unconscious. And they sat frozen, almost as though they were listening and hardly ever interrupting. People under space lean have a kind of politeness about them. They won't speak when someone else is speaking. That's why they take turns. Occasionally, of course, I paused a bit because the poignancy of the subject matter made me want to linger. And then one of them might put in a few words before I could gather myself together and continue. "Picnic of champagnes and aches and bittern of the century box. Round that and o'er Thissandy beaches. A salt and pepperit girl-leaping leopard." I drowned them out and kept talking. "This young lady, gentlemen," I said, "has an apartment fitted out for low gravity. Now, you might ask, of what use is low gravity? I intend to tell you, gentlemen, for if you have never had occasion to spend a quiet evening with a Marsport prima donna in privacy, you cannot imagine..." But I tried to make it unnecessary for them to imagine. The way I told it, they were there. They would remember all this afterward, but I doubted mightily that either of the two innocents would object to it in hindsight. Chances were they'd look me up to ask a phone number. I kept it up, with loving, careful detail, and a kind of heartfelt sadness in my voice, until the loudspeaker announced the arrival of the Space Eater. That was that. I said in a loud voice, "Rise, gentlemen." They got up in unison, faced the door, started walking, and as Ferrucci passed me, I tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Not you, you murdering louse," and my magnetic coil was on his wrist before he could breathe twice. Ferrucci fought like a demon. He was under no spacealine influence. They found the altered spacealine in thin, flesh-colored plastic pads, hugging the inner surface of his thighs, with hairs affixed to it in the normal pattern. You couldn't see it at all. You could only feel it, and even then it took a knife to make sure. Afterward, Rod Critton, grinning and half insane with relief, held me by the lapel with a death grip. "How did you do it? What gave it away?" I said, trying to pull loose, "One of them was faking a spacealine jag. I was sure of it. So I told him..." I grew cautious. None of the bum's business as to the details, you know. "Ribald stories, see, and two of them never reacted, so they were spacealine." But Ferrucci's breathing speeded up, and the beads of sweat came out on his forehead. I gave a pretty dramatic rendition, and he reacted, so he was under no spacealine. And when they all stood up to head out for the ship, I was sure my man had stopped him. Now, will you let me go? He let go, and I almost fell over backward. I was set to take off. My feet were pawing at the ground without any instructions from me, but I turned back. Hey, Rog, I said, can you sign me a chit for 1,000 credits without its going on the record? For services rendered to the service? That's when I realized he was half insane with relief and very temporary gratitude, because he said, sure, Mac, sure, 10,000 credits if you want it. I want, I said, I want, I want. He filled out an official service chit for 10,000 credits, good as cash anywhere in half the galaxy. He was actually grinning as he gave it to me, and you can bet I was grinning as I took it. How he intended accounting for it was his affair. The point was, I wouldn't have to account for it to Hilda. I stood in the booth one last time, signaling Flora. I didn't dare let matters go till I reached her place. The additional half hour might just give her time to get someone else, if she hadn't already. Make her answer. Make her answer. Make her, she answered. But she was in formal clothes. She was going out, and I had obviously caught her by 2 minutes. I am going out, she announced. Some men can be decent, and I do not wish to see you in the henceforward. I do not wish ever to find my eyes upon you. You will do me a great favor, Mr. Whoever you are, if you will unhand my signal combination and never pollute it with... I wasn't saying anything. I was just standing there holding my breath and also holding the chit up where she could see it. Just standing there, just holding. Sure enough, at the word pollute, she came in for a closer look. She wasn't much on education, that girl, but she could read 10,000 credits faster than any college student in the solar system. She said, Max, for me? All for you, baby, I said. I told you I had a little business to do. I wanted to surprise you. Oh, Max, that's sweet of you. I didn't really mind. I was joking. Now you come right here to me. She took off her coat, which with Flora was a very interesting action to watch. What about your date? I said. I said I was joking, she said. She dropped her coat gently to the floor and toyed with a brooch that seemed to hold together what there was of her dress. I'm coming, I said faintly. With every single one of those credits now, she said roguishly. With every single one, I said. I broke contact, stepped out of the booth, and now finally I was set, really set. I heard my name called. Max, Max! Someone was running toward me. Rog Critton said I would find you here. Mama's all right after all, so I got special passage on the Space Eater, and what's this about 10,000 credits? I didn't turn. I said, hello, Hilda. I stood rock steady. And then I turned, and I did the hardest thing I ever succeeded in doing in all my goddamn good-for-nothing space-hopping life. I smiled.